When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things. Watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
And as you know, we are tech heads.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
And with the available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only.
This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby. What if there was someone who wanted to help you find a job? Choose Express Employment Professionals, and that's exactly what you'll get.
They can help you find work in any industry. With just one interview at Express, you have a connection to endless jobs.
Whether you want a contract job, a new full-time role, or a summer job, choose Express Employment Professionals.
Express has more than 860 locally owned locations and no fees for job seekers.
Visit expresspros.com today to find a location near you. With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need.
That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class.
And 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles.
That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are with unlimited 2% cash rewards.
The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready.
Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
To the very first ever Pod Meets World. I am Danielle Fishel, aka Topanga Lawrence, and then eventually Topanga Lawrence Matthews. And I am joined this week and all the time by either one of you go.
I'll jump in. This is Ryder Strong. I played Sean Patrick Hunter. Was my middle name Patrick?
Come to you out of nowhere?
Yeah. Well, because you threw in your full name. I didn't realize. Did Topanga actually change her name to Matthews? That officially happened?
I think she was Topanga Lawrence Matthews.
Interesting. Okay.
She seems like she'd be a
hyphenate. I think my middle name ended up being Patrick. And I definitely remember when they introduced the last name Hunter, it was like, you know, six episodes in. I was like, oh, cool. I got a cool last name now.
Wow. I had a memory that came to me because of what you said, but we're getting ahead of ourselves.
This is just the way it's going to go, guys.
It is. Yeah. Oh, is it my turn? I'm sorry. And I am Will Friedle. I played Eric Neil Matthews, I want to say.
What?
And then at some point he just starts calling himself Kyle. So there was that too. Yeah, Eric's name changed with the times, but yes, it is the three of us together. And I think it was Neil at one point. I think again they threw in names for us eventually. We go like, oh, that's our name now.
Well, the continuity in the 90s was basically non-existent.
Not great.
No, yeah. Not great. We will definitely touch on that in this podcast, which this is a perfect time to tell you exactly what this podcast is. So a little history, I guess. Ryder, Will, and I are very close friends. Will actually lives so close to me, I could run to his house and be on his Zoom in about 5 minutes?
If that. Yeah, seriously.
Nice. I meant if I really ran. Like, in a car, I could be there in 35 seconds.
That's true.
And so we all have varying histories, I guess you would say, with Boy Meets World and whether or not any of us have seen them. I know for myself, I probably saw almost all, if not all, of the episodes when they aired in the 90s, because I was 12 years old. It was my first big major role. I was super excited to watch the show that we had filmed probably 4 or 5 months before. Sitting around Friday night with my family, we watched the whole TGIF block like a lot of families did. So eventually, once I was in high school, I probably wasn't like on Friday night necessarily always watching them, but I think I've seen almost all of them at least once, but it would have been back in the 90s. And then since the 90s, I have only seen a handful of episodes a handful of times since then. I have very few memories of what the episodes are about. I actually think I have very few memories of even filming the episodes. And so I'm really excited to kind of rewatch, but also watch for the first time, certainly the first time with like adult eyes.
Right.
And to see what it's like, both the cringe and the not. yeah. And what about you, Ryder?
So I'm pretty extreme in that I think I've only seen maybe 4 or 5 episodes of Boy Meets World.
Ever.
Well, I do think I watched most of the first season, like you, Danielle, with my family as like a thing. But there was an episode pretty early on, and I don't know if it was within the first season, but I remember watching it with my family and being so self-conscious and just hating the way I looked and, you know, all the like insecurities creeping in and realizing there was nothing I could do about it and just saying, you know, I'm never going to watch this show again. And then I didn't. I remember, you know, so I don't know if you guys remember, but I grew up in Northern California and I would fly home every weekend when we were making the show. So what ended up happening is I would fly from the Burbank airport to Oakland airport. And it was like without fail, Boy Meets World would be playing in the Burbank airport while I was waiting for my flight. And I just remember like, again, being so insecure and hiding my face. So I basically ran away from Boy Meets World all my life.
Or flew away, as it were.
And I think, yeah, so for me, this is really going to be interesting. my relationship to the show has changed drastically over the years. I now have a kid, and I am going to watch this show with my son because he's 7, and he has reached the age where I think it's appropriate to watch Boy Meets World, certainly the first season. And he likes sitcoms now. So yeah, so I'm really excited to see it through his eyes. I'm really excited to remember. I actually have a lot of memories of filming. This was a huge part of my life. I have a ton of memories to share behind the scenes, especially the early years. I don't know why. I guess when you're younger, you know, these experiences just sort of lock in place. But mostly for me, this is about, I think I spent a lot of my 20s avoiding Boy Meets World. There was I went to college in New York right after we finished the show, and I just wanted to be a student. I wanted to be an academic. I now write and direct. I moved away from acting completely. And so it just feels like a lot of my life has been distancing myself from this huge part of my life that, of course, 99% of the human population associates me with. And then with Girl Meets World, there was, you know, going back to direct that show and like that changed how I felt about it. So I'm in an interesting place. I think I'm going to really like the show now. I think this is a chance for me to appreciate it the way I probably should have at the time. And, because of my own issues, I did not. So I'm really excited to like feel good about this part of my life because personally, it's always felt great. My relationship with you guys has always been so positive. I feel like we have so many shared positive memories and I learned so much. But certainly in terms of the cultural, like what Boy Meets World is, I didn't watch TV growing up. So I didn't really understand even what we were doing at the time. So this will be interesting.
yeah. That's a lot to unpack in the first episode.
Oh, yeah. Well, we got 158 for it. We'll go deep, man.
My relationship with the show, I think, was different. Was definitely different than that. It was also different because we were, as you get older 4 years in age seems like nothing, but
you
when
16.
You're 16 and you're 12 and yeah. you're both 12, there's 4 years is a big difference. So I had a much different experience on Boy Meets World than really any of you did. You know, I only had to go to school the first year and wasn't in the classroom the whole time, but I have seen them all. I haven't seen them since they were on. I watched them when they first came out. I was never a partier, kind of. Everyone was like, oh, L.A. kids, and you're at clubs. I still have never been to a club in my entire life. So Friday night, I was home, essentially, and I would watch Boy Meets World. I did, as horrible as that sounds. But I haven't seen them since, except for, you know, we've done...
And that was a positive experience for you, like watching it, you just felt good, right?
Yeah, I did. You know, it was one of those things where it was a culmination of a lot of work, and it was all I... ever wanted to be.
Yeah, you were like such a TV
sitcom
kid.
Actor.
Yeah, you
I was
loved
such
sitcoms.
A TV actor, and that's all I ever wanted to be was on a sitcom. I always tell people I never wanted to be Michael J. Fox on Back to the Future. I wanted to be Michael J. Fox in Family Ties. That's all I ever wanted. So I loved what I was doing. I loved every day of it. I didn't want to go home. I didn't want to go to sleep. I just wanted to be on the set. I wanted to be in front of the audience. I wanted to find jokes that weren't there. That was like my joy. So I loved every second of it. I mean, again, looking back at it, you look back with the eyes of an adult and you say, well, wow, there's a lot I want to kind of, as we said, unpack. but it was as for the product itself, at least as I remember it, you know, seeing it at 24 the last time I saw it. And then, of course, we've done things like we always talk about the Scream episode, which we'll get to. So I've seen that 10 times because I've had to, you know, oh, we're going to watch that with an audience, or we're going to watch that and then do a panel. So I've seen that. I've seen the Plays with Squirrels episode because when I came back on Girl Meets World, I had to make sure I remembered what that character was like. But other than that, I haven't. But as you both know, I have kind of a creepy memory. So whenever the show is on in front of me, I'm right back where it was. I remember the next line coming. I remember what I felt as I was doing it. I remember what happened backstage. Like, I remember it all when it's back in front of me.
Meanwhile, I'm like, what were we doing? There was a whole episode about there's so many weird episodes that I look at. I'm like, that's me. I see me talking, but I have absolutely zero memory of being in that scene. It's crazy, man.
It's weird. It's more of an empathetic thing for me where I remember how I felt when I was doing it and I instantly feel the same way.
Wow.
So it's either I'm very anxious, you know, like we'll get into talking about how we're going to watch the first episode, but I watched the first episode and even pressing play, I was anxious. And I knew I was going to be anxious because not only am I an anxious person, but going back into the world, and also because I was so anxious when we did the pilot. I was so anxious when we did the first episode. So I instantly kind of channeled that feeling again. It's very odd to go back, but I think it's about time that we do, frankly, because we're coming at it from 3 different places.
Yeah, I hope I have a similar experience to Will. And I wish I had more of a similar memory experience like Ryder. I loved every second of doing the show when I was a kid. I loved it. Certainly when we first started, season 1, season 2, season 3. By the time we got to the 7th season, 6th season even, I was starting to be like, I'm over this. But like the beginning of it, I loved every second of it. And all I cared about was that I got to do more. And I felt the same way Will did. Like, I just wanted to be on set. It was hard for me to sleep. I'd get excited, before the next day of work. And yet, as this is probably something I should unpack in therapy or something, I don't have a lot of memories. Like, I have very, like... And I don't know why. There was no like trauma in my childhood that I'm aware of. I had a really like positive life experience and I loved being on the show. And yet memories for me over all stages of my life are very few and far between. And I don't really know why. So
I have a theory about that. So my theory about that is essentially no matter what you're doing, how extraordinary it is, if you do it every day, it just becomes your day-to-day life. So going and asking somebody who wasn't on a television show, talk to me about what it was like, you know, certain weeks during the 6th grade, you're also not going to have those same kind of memories. I mean, it's just...
Well, that's the thing. Our weekly schedule was the same, right?
It was.
Should talk about that. I feel like we should explain what it was like to actually be on the show because it becomes regular. You know, even though each episode is different, they're obviously, you know, we're playing the same character. We're in the same sets for the most part.
Yep.
And then behind the scenes, we're following the same schedule every week. We go to school for certain hours. We rehearse for certain hours. We have the live show on Thursday night where the audience comes in. We're wearing a lot of the same wardrobe. So in a weird way, it lends itself to amnesia, right? It becomes repetitive and you start taking it for granted. But unlike you, Danielle, I didn't want to be there from the get-go. I remember, I have this very distinct memory of when we got picked up for the back nine and calling my girlfriend at the time back in Northern California. I was 13 years old, just so lovesick, as which we will certainly talk about because I always was lovesick. And I just remember telling her, like, I signed a 7-year contract. I will be 20 years old if this show keeps going, and thinking that was just death. Like, that was going to be the worst thing. Can you imagine if this possibly kept going until I was 20? Because I just, I wanted to be home. I wanted to be like with, and then that's exactly what happened.
As a podcast focus on reliving memories from our past, I can tell you firsthand, as you get older, your memory just isn't as reliable as it used to be.
Yeah, if we didn't have Will here, there would be a lot of dead air.
That is true, Robert. Well, guys, since I know you need a little help, you're going to love Legacy Box. It's the safest way to digitize your home videos and pictures, even when you think you don't have a way to watch them anymore.
Oh, this is perfect, especially with Mother's Day right around the corner.
It really is the perfect gift for the whole family, whether it's a sweet 16 or college graduation.
First steps or performing a Backstreet Boys dance in between scenes on your childhood network sitcom. This is the way to reconnect with your history.
The process is so easy. You just fill your legacy box with old VHS or camcorder tapes, pictures, negatives, film reels. I mean, they even work with over 15 different types of analog media, so they have you covered.
Then you just send the box back and their team professionally digitizes everything by hand in the U.S. and you'll get it all back on the cloud or on a thumb drive along with your originals.
I recently sent off my first box to Legacy Box and I got into my old storage unit and found about 40 tapes, all different media, and I was able to label each one and send it off. I cannot wait to see what these tapes hold.
Jensen and I also recently got some of his home videos digitized, and being able to hear his parents' voices again has been a real gift.
So join over 1.5 million families that have trusted Legacy Box with their memories.
Go to legacybox.com/world to save 60% during their best Mother's Day sale ever.
It's time to connect with your past and make sure those memories are preserved properly.
That's legacybox.com/world. Summer is steadily approaching, and you know what that means.
Wearing a shirt at the beach so I don't look like a sad radish for the entire vacation?
Okay, maybe.
Being thirsty?
Yes, Ryder, you got it. It is time to go outside and bask in the glory that is sunshine with barbecues and hikes and trips to exotic locations.
With your shirt on?
Yes, with your shirt on.
It is time to jump into a camper van with your son and your wife and
torture everyone. Well, with all these summer activities, it's so important that you stay hydrated.
And we're here to tell you all about Liquid IV. It has 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients in a single stick.
It's clear why Liquid IV is the #1 powdered hydration brand in America.
You just rip open a packet and pour it into your water and bam, you're hydrating with electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients. But most importantly, it tastes good.
It's so easy and perfect after a workout, which I do to replenish after a nice long run.
And you can travel with Liquid IV right there in your pocket. Add it to a water on a flight or after a big night when you need just a little assistance to get up in the morning.
Tear, pour, live more. 1 stick plus 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone. And with sugar-free flavors like white peach, green grape, raspberry melon, and lemon lime, you can't miss.
Turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV.
Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use the code WORLD at checkout.
That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code WORLD at liquidiv.com.
We talk a lot about moms on this podcast and how important they are to us.
Absolutely. Without Jen Fischel, what pictures would we post on our social media?
But above and beyond all the incredible mom things they did for us, laundry, dinners, let us travel to Los Angeles alone to chase our dreams of acting. Will, what else was your mom doing?
My mom was also running all 3 courts in Connecticut while authoring books.
Wow. Well, whether your mom was a legal trailblazer or just the greatest source of inspiration and care in the world, this Mother's Day, she deserves some flowers.
You are right. And that's why I'm sending mine farm fresh flowers from Books.
That's short for bouquets. And while I'm teaching you things, how about 25% off your entire Books order so you can join us in treating our mothers to a beautiful arrangement?
Love it.
Here's why I like the Books Company. They are different. Their flowers are cut fresh and sourced directly from the best flower farms, so they last way longer. They even have flowers grown on the side of a volcano.
That's really cool. Books has modern designs and unique flowers you can't find anywhere else. Your mom is unique, so she deserves flowers just as special.
And Books is simple. I went online, picked the delivery date, and I'm done.
Mother's Day is May 12th. Don't miss the chance to thank your mom. Order your Books now.
And with 25% off, you can send some to mom, wife, aunt, and even grandma.
Go to Books.com and use promo code WORLD for 25% off.
That's Books.com, promo code WORLD.
Books, promo code WORLD.
When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things: watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
If we could, we would take Hyundai to prom.
Technically, Hyundai is more visible on this show than Topanga.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to a 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
Say teched out again.
Nope, that was a one-time show. Snooze, you lose.
Well, either way, the Hyundai Ioniq 5 is a tech-forward electric SUV.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
So that means your car won't die out like the Matthews family vehicle on New Year's Eve, forcing me to miss out on kissing supermodel Rebecca Alexa in front of all of Philadelphia.
And with available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only.
So, question, why were you on the show? Why were you an actor? If you didn't want the job, what was the motivating factor then to become an actor?
Great question. No, I definitely wanted to be an actor. Boy Meets World was like my 20th job. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was already, it's so crazy to think about, but at 13, I was already cynical. I had already done the TV series that I wanted to do, which was a TV series where I got to play Julie Andrews' son. And I had a much bigger part. It was so much fun. It was my first sitcom. We did 7 episodes. Blake Edwards was directing, a legendary director. It was like, and we had all the attention, you know, Julie Andrews, The Sound of Music, Mary Poppins. I was playing her son. I loved it so much. And we had done that for 2 years before Boy Meets World. And it had only filmed 7 episodes and they dumped it. The show just got dumped on the summer program on Saturday nights. And so by the time Boy Meets World came around, it was like I had agents and managers and everybody saying, this is good. You should just get on another pilot. Just do another pilot this year. And I wanted to do movies. I wanted to do plays. I'd started with Les Miserables. Like, I thought of, you know, I just thought, like, and here was Boy Meets World, which at the time, if you guys remember, it was called the Untitled Ben Savage Project. It was being built around Ben. And so my part was tiny. I think in the original pilot script, I only had 2 lines. And so I wanted to act, but for me, Boy Meets World was just like one of the many jobs I was doing or that I wanted to do. And so the fact that it became this hit surprised me and sort of threw me for a loop. And like I said, I didn't watch television, so I didn't even really understand like what we were doing, like what a sitcom was versus a soap opera versus a movie. You know, I liked movies, but when it came to television, I didn't understand like the form. I didn't watch that format growing up. So I just was kind of like lost and kind of I felt like an outsider, frankly. And I felt like an outsider in Los Angeles. I never felt super comfortable like around other actors. And it wasn't until our set that I really became friends with other child actors. You know, I think there's a protective thing, you know, every child actor has a parent behind them, at least one, who's helping them, you know, manage and navigate their career. Yeah, that's true. You were older, right? You used to just take a bus into New York City, right?
By myself. Both my parents are lawyers. My dad was in the Navy. They had nothing to do with this industry. Right.
We got a lot to unpack there.
We got a lot to unpack, yeah.
But I mean, I guess like for me, there was always this fear sort of, you know, bred into me by my parents of like, and my parents were always afraid of being a stage parent, right? And then being a bratty child actor, like those, there was this fear. It's like this lingering thing that constantly hangs over you as a child actor. Like, you don't want to be like them. And they're like these monsters who only care about, like, you know, getting the job and fame. And like, that was like this bred into me by the time I did Boy Meets World, that like, I it was a protective shell that my parents had sort of put around me. Like, make sure you have a normal childhood. Make sure you stay in school and focus on, you know, the important things in life, and don't get too caught up. Like, acting's great, the art is great, but don't get too caught up in, you know, the craziness. And there was craziness, you know, I mean, it's like, we did pretty well. Like, a lot of the 90s kid actors turned out way better. But if you think about the 80s, like, there was this sort of reputation of like, you're going to hold up a liquor store one day if you don't keep working, right? Or yeah. you're going to become a drug addict, or like, being a child actor was fraught. It was constantly fraught with this danger. Like, you're going to fall off a cliff if you're not careful, and your whole life could be ruined. And we all felt that, right? I mean, like, there was an awareness of that. And I think I just internalized it.
So let's actually talk a little bit about what our Boy Meets World schedule was, because it was a little bit of a unique schedule, because Michael Jacobs celebrates the Sabbath on Friday evenings. Right. And so
Most shows shoot.
Exactly.
Friday,
yeah. Most shows have a Monday through Friday schedule, which is what I think people think of when they think of starting a work week. You go to work on Monday, you end your week on Friday, and you have the weekend. Michael wanted to have our live studio audience tapings on Thursday nights, which meant our first day of rehearsal was Friday morning. And every sitcom show starts off their week with a table read. So Friday morning, we would show up to a room, like a conference room, and there were lots of chairs set up, and the ABC and Disney executives would be sitting in those seats along with our parents or whoever else was there, our studio teachers, and some of the crew. And mm-hmm. then we had a long conference table set up with name tags for all the actors. And there were two tables. They were set up like a T. So a really long one for all the actors. And then at the top of the T was where the writers, producers, Michael Jacobs, and the director, where they sit. And then we just read the script. Did you guys prep before a table read, or did you like to go in cold?
So first of all, I think one of the things we have to say is we eventually got a room. If memory serves, when we started, we were in trailers. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. At the Disney lot, we were in like this big trailer.
I don't remember that at all.
So this big trailer is where we had our first. I distinctly remember. So my parents still live in the same house back in Connecticut where I grew up. I was home not too long ago, and I was cleaning out my desk, and I came upon, I kept a diary for like the first 3 months I did Boy, because of course I was going to write in it every day, and it lasted about 3 months.
Amazing.
And the first entry was the first table read.
No way.
And it was the 2-page thing, and I was talking about how we walked into the trailer.
Why do you not have this diary right now?
I know.
Get
I know,
your parents
seriously.
To FedEx that to you, and you're going to have to read that on the show.
I will send it. But I remember the thing I remember most about it. So I would prep as much as I could, having any idea what I was doing.
Well, yeah, because
none.
We didn't get the scripts until the night before.
Until the night before, we get the scripts and we get them delivered, because of course nothing was emailed. So
nothing
there would
was
be
emailed. I know. So a courier,
manila envelope,
would drive to our house, all of our individual houses. And drop a script off on the porch.
And we will get into more about why that is awful for the production assistant when they're rewriting till 4 o'clock in the morning. But we get there, and I had never done a table read. I did not know we were starting with a table read. I did not know what it was. And I walked in with the script. They sat me down at the table. My mom was there. I'll never forget that. And my hands and feet were shaking so much that I kept everything tucked under the table. So for the first table read, it's just like my head was sticking above the table as everything was shaking. And so I prepped as much as I could, but I didn't know anybody. I didn't know what I was doing. We will get into watching the first episode. Clearly, I didn't know what I was doing till several episodes into the series. but it was really scary. And then you read it like a straight play. You read it straight through, like from beginning to end. Somebody's reading the stage directions. Topanga walks in to Chubby's and sits down with Corey. Hey, Corey, how's everything going? So, I mean, you read it straight through.
And this is really a process to test jokes. fundamentally, you know, and to see if the episode is working, because what the writers are doing is they're listening and they're taking notes. And if people don't laugh,
That's gone.
Well, and there were times where the actor was gone, too, after a table read. It didn't happen often, but there were times where it was like they were not just testing us, but also the actor. And it was like, hey, I can't wait to work with you, Jimmy. Where's Jimmy? Jimmy's gone. Jimmy had two jokes and somehow missed three of them. So he's gone.
It's really it's a constantly evolving, like throughout the week, the script is being rewritten multiple times a day. We, you know, after the table read, we then go into the rehearsal period, which basically lasts the next 3 days. Where we're rehearsing on our feet with our scripts in hand, and they, you know, the scripts are constantly changing. So you can't memorize anything. You know, some of us would, but as we got better, I feel like we did start memorizing it almost immediately. Like your brain clicked into this zone. Yeah, but for the most part, we'd be on stage and it would just be the actors, the director, a script supervisor. Who else would be there? Like maybe props?
Usually the teachers would pop in.
A very small group of us would be going through the scenes and putting it on its feet. And we would do that the first day, get new scripts that night.
Well, there was, Friday, there was a run through, remember?
Well,
Friday was a very light rehearsal because, like Will said, there was almost always a full script rewrite immediately after table read. Mm-hmm. And so they were rewriting on Friday, which lets the director and the actors know, don't memorize too much of this. Don't put it on its feet too much because whole things may change. Sets may change. You may not be no longer in the classroom. You're going to be in the living room. Like a lot of things can change. So you do like a really fast, light rehearsal on Friday, and then you come in ready to go on Monday for a full Monday rehearsal and then a run through that night for the producers and writers. Right. The network run through is not until the next day.
Now, I didn't even know what a run through was. Nobody prepared me for any of this. So when they're like, hey, are you ready for the run through? I had no idea what that meant.
So what is a run through? Will, explain that.
So a run through is you do the entire show from beginning to end. You're holding the scripts because you haven't memorized the lines by this point.
No costumes, barely any props.
No props, no cameras. You're just running it through like a play from beginning to end. There's a bank of director's chairs set up in front of whatever, you know, say you're in the classroom scene. There's a bank of director's chairs. All the producers and directors sit there.
Which is basically where the fourth wall should be. Because every set was built with the three walls. Right. Where the cameras would be, there's just a bank of chairs. Yeah.
And then we go through it and we'd flub lines and we'd miss jokes and we'd, you know, then you would get up and walk to the next area where there'd be more chairs set up and you'd continue the show and you'd run it from beginning to end. And I did not know that was happening. And then I also did not know that was followed, especially on a Michael Jacobs set, by the note session.
Note session.
Someone talk about the note session, please, because I'm getting agitated just thinking about it.
So typically after a run through, everybody gathers in one of the sets. Everyone sits down, all the actors on one side, all the writers on the other side. And the executive producer and or the director, but mostly the executive producer, gives feedback on what just happened on the run through. And this feedback session, I think on most shows, probably is like 20 minutes, which is like, hey, this joke didn't work. And they give notes to the actors if they have any, like, hey, could you try it this way, try it that way. With Michael Jacobs, who is the creator of Boy Meets World, he was really into the note sessions. We would have 1 to 2 hour long note sessions. And he would open up a script and say, all right, page one, line one. And
here's a memory. I can hear his pages turning.
Snap. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. Michael took note sessions to a performance art. It was really just about him giving, you know, he would most often talk to the actors. He wouldn't talk so much about the script at that stage. As the show went on, it became more of an open process, I feel like, where he would admit like, oh, we got to fix this whole scene or this whole thing. But for the most part, it was a chance for him to try and explain to us like what they were aiming for and where we missed the mark as actors or what was going wrong. And then they would go off after the 2 hour note session. The writers would then end up writing all night. Like on our show, as opposed to other shows, I think they would go into like 2 in the morning that night rewriting. And then we'd get a new script the next morning with some changes. And then do it all over again, this time
for
the network.
And that poor PA courier person would drop off the scripts at whatever time they finished writing them so that we had them for the drive to work the next morning. We didn't
so
have to wait till
paper.
We got to set. So much paper,
so
but
much
also like a 4 a.m. dew covered script would just be on the porch sometimes because the sprinklers had gone on in the morning or whatever, and it had just been delivered.
And there are 11 cast members that lived all over Los Angeles. It's not like Danielle and I right now where we live 30 seconds from each other. It was somebody driving all over L.A.
to individual houses. Yeah.
And apparently they were, you know, it wasn't just for us. It was the thing that we didn't realize is that every change they make affects wardrobe. Every change they make affects set deck.
Every department head gets a script.
So everybody got a script. So they were delivering arguably 50, 75 scripts a night, you know, all over Los Angeles at 3 o'clock in the morning, these poor PAs for no money. And no, I mean, just to be part of the industry. And they're the unsung heroes of the show. But it was the whole experience was insane. And then we get to, so that was Monday and that was studio run through. No, that was producer run through.
All right.
So Tuesday.
Well, we should also insert, meanwhile, for those of us children who are in school, we have to do, by California state law, 3 hours of school a day. So
Which sounds like nothing.
No, but it's actually a lot when you're one-on-one with a teacher. Or in our case, we had two teachers ultimately on the show. When we first started, we only had one. But ultimately, we ended up having two teachers who they are basically our personal tutors. Because all of us are in different grades. Ben and I was one grade older than Ben. And Danielle, you were even a grade younger than Ben, I think.
Correct.
Will, you were already in high school.
I was a senior in high school when we started. Yeah.
So you had two teachers having to navigate completely different subject matters. And we would get all of our work from our school ahead of time. And so we'd be showing up with our own textbooks, our own subjects, our own set of requirements. And these teachers would spend, you know, 3 to 4 hours a day with us being like, all right, Ryder, you're working on your English paper right now. Go ahead. That's what you're doing for the next 20 minutes. Ben, you have Latin. And then they'd be doing Latin declensions with Ben. And like, it, you know, it's just our classroom became, you know, this whole other level of work that we were doing. So even when, you know, normally on a show, you would get a break and be able to sit in your dressing room and I don't know.
Well, the break is usually then when you're not in the scene. So the scene now doesn't involve Sean or doesn't involve Eric or doesn't involve Topanga. You would normally then go get a break. And for us, that's where we would go get to bank 20 or 30 minutes of school, do 20 or 30 minutes of school. It wasn't ever 3 hours of school consecutively. It was 20 minutes here, 40 minutes there, possibly an hour if you were so lucky.
Right.
And so we'd run back to our classroom and do as much school as we can.
Or saunter past
stop at craft service
table. It's many Twizzlers are there? Yeah, there. So much food and nothing to eat.
But so much of our social life did revolve around the school classroom, you know, which is interesting because I think people always imagine us on set hanging out, which we did. But when we were on set, we were often working on the scene. Our real downtime, our real getting to know each other, hanging out, getting to know each other's parents, who were always there, by the way. We always had to have our parents. So you have to imagine that there's a, you know, for every kid, there's a parent also on set. There's a studio teacher or two, and we would be hanging out. We would have the craft service table, which is the table that has all the snacks and coffee and tea. And then there'd be our classroom, which was a trailer the first season. It was just a trailer that we'd sit in with. Had
lots
a couch and tables. And like, you know, our studio teachers would put little posters on the wall, try and make it look like a classroom, but it never really felt like a classroom.
There's always that cat with the hang in there, baby.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, we're in
But that's
school.
Where our social life, like, really, like, that's where we really got to know each other, right? Is like running around backstage. You know, and the stage itself is these huge sound stages, like just these big warehousey. And we were on the Disney lot the first year, which was
in
also
their
very
biggest
cool.
stage, by the way, in their film stage, which is stage two,
right?
Yeah. Which was not broken in half. Most of the stages were broken in half, and it'd be half the size. We were in this cavernous, ridiculous stage where it was like, oh, we've got to build a giant pirate ship, build it on stage two. So that's
and
where
Home
they
Improvement
put
was next
World.
Door.
Yep. Stage
and
one.
And then was Thunder Alley going that first season?
Yes.
Thunder Alley with Andrew Keegan and who else was on that show?
Oh, he passed not to Ed Asner.
Oh yeah, that's right. So there was this weird little community too of like our outside of our stage. There was a rec room that they had set up for all the kids of Disney. Do you remember this?
We did PE. We had gym.
So we had PE, which basically meant we'd go and play ping pong or football.
Football.
We did play football on asphalt, by the way.
With the Home Improvement kids.
All the time. Yeah.
It was like, oh wait, okay. So Jonathan Taylor Thomas is on Lee Norris. So that's not a good good matchup. Ryder, I'm going to hit you in the corner there. Try not to, you know, run into the rusty nails on the side of that thing.
Oh, wait. And then Haley Joel Osment was on Thunder Alley too, right?
Yeah. That's how he met was Haley a kid Joel kid, though. Like, he was little,
he was like
little,
six
wasn't
or
he?
Seven.
Yeah. But it was, I remember you, they brought in Nintendo, it wasn't even 64 at the time, it was Nintendo, whatever mm-hmm. the second one was.
Super Nintendo,
and you were a Street Fighter master.
Street Fighter 2?
Street Fighter 2 master, and every
they let
time-
you count this as PE?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. PE became a joke. It was just, exactly. You know what it was? It was wreck. It was like R&R. You know, like, we were like prisoners. They had to like let us out in the yard. We could do whatever we want. We'd trade bubble gum cigarettes and
we did, but it was, you tried to play Ryder in Street Fighter, and
no,
it was the most frustrating thing ever,
still to this day.
And that was Jim. There you go. Hey, I got my exercise in, thankfully, and then I'd go and smoke a cigarette and go back to work.
Were you smoking at the time?
Yes, yeah. Will was smoking.
Yeah, I was already smoking,
which is so crazy. A 16-year-old, like,
are you kidding? By 16, I'd already been smoking for,
and the most 90s thing about that is that, like, none of the grown-ups like stopped you, or like, they were like, okay, you know,
it was
like
it
nowadays
was,
they would crack down on that.
They'd
be
and
like,
they should. Are you kidding? I just celebrated that, and I'm telling, I need to tell everybody this, on the 27th of May, I celebrated my 8th year without a cigarette.
Good for you.
Please,
man,
quit smoking. It's very horrible for you. But by the time I knew it was bad for me, I was hooked. So I mean, I was smoking heavily by 14, and I probably started smoking at 11.
Yeah,
I was going to New York. I was already on television. I was, you know, it was the thing to do. And then you start doing it because it's cool, and then you're addicted to it.
Where would you smoke at Disney? I remember you smoking at Radford.
Outside. Yeah, outside,
but like right outside the state. I don't remember that area. Like, I guess
no,
I just
I didn't hide anything.
I know you were. That's the thing. Like, it's so weird.
I kept my pack of cigarettes in my shirt pocket, and Bill Daniels every day would walk up to me, and he'd tap the pack of cigarettes, and he'd go right next to your heart, and walk away.
Oh.
And it just, he would do that. Oh, he would do that every day, every single day, right next to your heart. And it's like one of those things where you're like, come on, I'm 16. I know the world. I know everything. And you look back now and it's like, man, if you just listened, you know.
Should have listened to Feeny.
Of course. Wow. That is the hashtag du jour. So if you're young and you're smoking, or you're thinking to smoke, sir, it's just not worth it. It mm-hmm. really is not worth it. So, yeah, I mean, I was already... I had a much different, like, you talk about parents on the set and all that stuff. I am from a very close-knit family. It sounds like I'm not, but I'm from a very, very close-knit family. My parents just celebrated their 58th wedding anniversary, 59th wedding anniversary. We're all super close. But my parents were two lawyers in Connecticut. My dad is still a practicing lawyer. He's 83 years old. My mom ran all three of the courts in Connecticut. My dad was also a captain of the Navy. They're like, if you want to go do this, we're not going to stand in your way, but we can't give up our lives to come with you. Yeah. So they used to pick me up at school, drop me off at the bus in Farmington, Connecticut. I'd take a 3-hour bus ride down to New York, where my manager would pick me up most of the time. Sometimes he didn't. I was 10 or 11. I'd walk the streets in New York, go to my audition, grab a slice of pizza. I'd come back and go home. And by 11 or 12, I lived in the city because I was on a show. And then I got Boy Meets World, and that was it. My first guardian was my oldest brother's fraternity brother, Spencer, who's still a good friend of mine, lives right down the street.
Wait, I remember Spencer. Who did you live in the city with at 11?
My oldest brother. My oldest brother at the time.
Spencer.
I lived with Gary. No, I lived with Gary. My older brother, Gary, at the time. I was 11 years old. 12 years old doing Don't Just Sit There. So I lived in New York with Gary, who is retired from Wall Street at 45 years old. But at the time, to live with me, took a job as a janitor and was a janitor in New York so we could have an apartment. And I was on a show on Nickelodeon. I was on Nickelodeon from like 12 to 15, and then I got Boy at 16 and moved out to L.A.
And you were the cool guy from New York. You know, there were always, when you're a kid actor, you always audition for stuff, and then it always comes down to the same three people. You know, it's like, because there's, the pool was very limited back then. So it was like, you know, it was always me, Elijah Wood, and like Ben. I first met Ben because Ben and I screen tested against each other for Newsies. Do you guys remember?
Of course.
Yeah, the musical Newsies. So it was down to Luke Edwards, who ended up getting it, this kid named Ben Savage, who I met that day, and then me, and we had to sing, we had to dance and act. And back then they did screen tests on 35mm on the Disney lot, so we had a full film shoot. Anyway, that's a whole nother story, but then there was always, whenever they would have these auditions, like, there would always be that cool guy from New York who'd get flown in New York and they always got the part. You'd always be like, we're just the other schmucks from LA who always see see each other. But yeah, I remember, yeah, your life must have been so different from ours as far as being a kid actor, man.
Oh, it was. I lived in the woods in Connecticut, and it was like, you know, I would go back to my regular life in Connecticut, which was the best. But then I have an audition today. I have to go shoot a commercial today. The bus would pick me up. I would go down to the bus, and I would do my job, whatever I had to do, and then back home to Connecticut. You know, that's how it was. So it was much different for me. The whole LA thing was very, when I finally did move out to Los Angeles, I didn't like it. It was very weird. I was very disconnected from everybody. You guys were so much younger than I was, and I was right in the middle. So I was either too old or too young to really hang out with anybody. Luckily I met Marsden right away. And so Jason Marsden, who played Jason Marsden
on Boy Meets World,
who is still one of my best friends in the world. And, we had a small little group of friends, but they're like, hey man, didn't you go and party and do my, I would get back to Connecticut. My friends be like, what's the club scene like? I was like, I don't know. I don't know. The racket club's okay. What, they let me in, but it was not that kind of big party thing for me. And it was, yeah, very,
okay,
very,
so
different.
We've made it to Wednesday.
Right. So Wednesday was pre-tape day.
Yes.
And so
when they finally bring in cameras.
Did we talk about Tuesday run through being for the network? Then they brought the network in.
Yeah. Tuesday was then the same day, rehearsal day. And
exactly,
then we do a run through again,
network. Right.
And then network gets to give notes to Michael, and then Michael delivers notes to us. And then Wednesday they bring in cameras, and we shoot everything that we're not going to shoot in front of the audience. So all of the sets that take place directly in front of the audience are usually the ones that you want the audience to see. Anything that's called on a swing set that's like off to the side that you can't see, you shoot that stuff. Or a scene that maybe does take place right in front of the audience, but is very intricate or detailed or extremely long and is going to take a long time and you don't have that much time in front of the audience, you shoot that on Wednesday. So that is called pre-tape day.
And interestingly, on our show, they started bringing in an audience for that pre-tape day. Do you remember this? They figured out that we really thrived with an audience. I mean, like all, you know, good comedy shows. And so what they figured out that on Wednesdays, they could bring in school buses of school kids and like make it like a field trip. So we started having really small audiences of just high schoolers or like kids on Wednesday. So we started doing our pre-tape with an audience, which is really unusual. Yeah. That was something that I don't think other shows ever really did. And I might have been jumping ahead. It might not have been until third or fourth season that we started doing that, but certainly like we broke the sort of sitcom rules by having an audience.
Did we do that through the end? Season seven, we were bringing in an audience on Wednesday. Really? Wow.
I kind of remember it at the end.
Yeah. Weird.
But then Thursday.
The big day.
We still pre-taped stuff in the early part of the day, right?
Mm-hmm. We'd be pre-taping. We'd be rehearsing for camera because the camera people, you have four cameras going at the same time. And basically the way you shoot a sitcom, a multi-camera sitcom, is that you're performing it like a play. And then the cameras are also constantly moving. They're these big cameras on wheels. So the camera operators have to make sure that they set up the shot for the joke or for the person that has the next line. So they're basically memorizing the script like the actors, or they're just kind of on the fly making sure that they get the shots that they need. So it's like this interesting ballet between the actors moving around the set, doing the scene, and the cameras, where the fourth wall is, also moving around and shifting and trading places. And so we would rehearse to get that rhythm down so that we would only have to do two or three takes in front of the audience and just really make it, give it that live sense, you know, like what, I mean, and this is the form that I Love Lucy really established. They did it with three cameras. By the time they got to us, it was four cameras. And it's an amazing form. I mean, it's kind of old fashioned now, right? It's like gone out of style.
Oh, I hope it comes back.
It's my favorite.
But it's almost like a radio play. You know what I mean?
It is.
It's like, it doesn't look real. Like the set, you know, the way people interact or the way people move, it's not realistic, but it's so fun. It's like sort of the last connection between television and live theater.
It absolutely is. And as an actor,
it's the best because it's so much easier. Like when you do single camera shows, you have to, you know, redo the same thing over and over for a million different camera angles. They have to adjust the lighting every time. In this case, you just do it two or three times and you try and make it as funny as possible.
Which is the best.
It's also really great too. Well, it was back then, especially because there was no social media. So we didn't have direct contact with people watching the show ever. unless we were out in the world after the show started airing. And every now and then people might say, hey, are you? I watch that show. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, our direct contact with people who watch the show was non-existent. Yeah. And so getting a group of people, whether or not they had ever seen the show before, we didn't know or didn't care. But we knew people were going to get to see us do it in live time. Yeah. And the energy that the audience brings from the moment it's Thursday morning, we just know, like, oh my gosh, I have this live show day energy. And you could hear them getting loaded into the audience, and we're getting our hair and makeup done backstage. And, you know, we're backstage and we're cracking jokes, and Will's making fun of everyone's wardrobe. And
then we had our ritual before the
live show. We had a cast ritual. We had the cast scream.
Yeah, and because they would introduce us one by one in front of the audience to start the show, because they have a warm-up MC comedian named Mitch. What was Mitch's
Bank.
Last name? Mitch Bank was our warm-up. Yeah. He was a comedian, actor, guy.
And so producer. He was also a producer. Michael's other shows.
And he MC'd every one of our episodes from start to finish. And he so he would warm up the audience and just talk to them, play games with them or whatever. And then he would introduce us one at a time. And so we would gather backstage behind one of the sets, usually the living room set. And we would be so nervous and excited, and all the stuff that would be going into the week would just be bubbling. And we would put our hands together in a circle and scream at the top of our lungs. And then we would get introduced one by one. And then they would be off to the races, getting the show.
That, you know, I have to say exactly what Danielle was just talking about. I might miss that energy before the show. Of all of us standing back there, and it's exactly like Danielle said, there's this, it takes over all your senses. You hear the audience come in, you feel the temperature in the building rise a bit because there's now 300 people in there. You hear them laughing at the warm-up, especially when the later seasons, when you knew they waited in line because they just wanted to see us. It wasn't like, hey, what's this show? Right. It's, I can't believe I get a chance to see Boy Meets World. Yeah. And there was such an energy about that, that you feel like you can walk on water.
And all the lights are down too. It's all dark for the first time, because all throughout the week, it's all just been broad, you know, work lights, and you're just in a giant warehouse. But that night, everything gets dark. So it's pitch black backstage.
Yeah.
So
you're in your wardrobe. You've got, you know, it's like you've got crisp new clothes on, you know, your lines, you're ready to go. You're thinking about the jokes.
We have such a tight like bond because we've been working on this through the week. So we've seen the evolution of the script and of our characters and of our rehearsal process. And we've complained to each other, and maybe like we've definitely rooted for each other, and we've seen us get bad notes and good notes. And here it is. It's all culminating in this moment, and it's the most fun 3.5 hours of you work the entire week for those 3.5 hours,
and they call your name and you run out and the audience screams and you get to see all your friends standing there waiting to get, knowing they feel exactly the way you do. It's such a bond with a cast. And then they yell action and you're just off to the races. It's wonderful.
It's so much fun.
It's wonderful. It really is.
I miss it.
We talk a lot about moms on this podcast and how important they are to us.
Absolutely. Without Jen Fischel, what pictures would we post on our social media?
But above and beyond all the incredible mom things they did for us, laundry, dinners, let us travel to Los Angeles alone to chase our dreams of acting. Will, what else was your mom doing?
My mom was also running all three courts in Connecticut while authoring books.
Wow. Well, whether your mom was a legal trailblazer or just the greatest source of inspiration and care in the world, this Mother's Day, she deserves some flowers.
You are right, and that's why I'm sending mine Farm Fresh Flowers from Bouqs.
That's short for bouquets. And while I'm teaching you things, how about 25% off your entire Bouqs order so you can join us in treating our mothers to a beautiful arrangement?
Love it.
Here's why I like the Bouqs company. They are different. Their flowers are cut fresh and sourced directly from the best flower farms, so they last way longer. They even have flowers grown on the side of a volcano.
That's really cool. Bouqs has modern designs and unique flowers you can't find anywhere else. Your mom is unique, so she deserves flowers just as special.
And Bouqs is simple. I went online, picked the delivery date, and I'm done.
Mother's Day is May 12th. Don't miss the chance to thank your mom. Order your Bouqs now.
And with 25% off, you can send some to mom, wife, aunt, and even grandma.
Go to Bouqs.com and use promo code WORLD for 25% off.
That's Bouqs.com, promo code WORLD.
Bouqs, promo code WORLD.
When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things: watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
If we could, we would take Hyundai to prom.
Technically, Hyundai is more visible on this show than Topanga.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to a 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
Say teched out again.
Nope, that was a one-time show. Snooze, you lose.
Well, either way, the Hyundai Ioniq 5 is a tech-forward electric SUV.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
So that means your car won't die out like the Matthews family vehicle on New Year's Eve, forcing me to miss out on kissing supermodel Rebecca Alexa in front of all of Philadelphia.
And with available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it.
Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh, every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by the experts.
Not just any experts, specialized experts, real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach.
Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Sometimes it's a struggle between buying what you want over buying what you need.
But with the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can do both. You can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need.
That means you can earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team.
And 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking.
Earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like those new golf clubs you've been eyeing.
And 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a divot repair tool after you've torn up your lawn.
Let's try that again. Earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like workout equipment for your home.
And then earn 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller to soothe your sore muscles.
That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are with unlimited 2% cash rewards.
The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready.
Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
So I am very, very excited for this podcast because I really want to do like this big nostalgia dive, not just for the show, but even just for my own life. I'm excited to do this nostalgia dive and talk about what we're wearing and what the style was and whether or not I would still wear the thing I'm wearing back then or whether I would never be caught dead in it. I'm looking forward to all of that. I'm also super excited. We're going to have a ton of amazing guests. We are going to have Trina McGee, Betsy Randall, Rusty Russ, who played Mom and Dad.
Rusty.
Bill Daniels, of course. Famous Mr. Feeney is going to be joining us. We are going to have Matt Lawrence, Maitland Ward. We're also going to invite a lot of our famous guest stars. Jason Marsden, who we already mentioned, is hopefully going to come by. And
Mars will be here.
Okay, great. Yeah, we're going to have a lot of great guest stars. We're also going to have writers and directors and crew, if we're able to find them. Like, talking about wardrobe, there are several wardrobe people I would love to have on to talk about what the inspiration behind shirts on shirts on shirts was.
The question became, how many hoods could you wear?
Is three hoods one hood too many?
One hood too many? Let's find out.
This and episode then we got to talk about hair. I mean, the amount of focus on our hair. And like,
I mean, hair was a big one on the show.
Which is so weird because like I just remember thinking like, why do they care? And then it became a thing. Like our hair, you know, people cared about it. Like audiences would like, you know, like my hairstyle, this butt cut, middle part, what do you want to call it? I don't even know. It's like become this iconic thing that I couldn't escape, you know, I still can't escape it. And like, I just, yeah, there's a lot going
on
there.
Hair was a big thing. Hair was a big thing on our show. Yeah. Very strange.
So why don't we talk about some frequently asked questions just to get some of these things out of the way. We know you have them. We get asked them all the time. I think the number one most frequently asked question as of late is, where's Corey?
Yeah. So phrase just like that because they don't know his name.
because you know, we get referred to as our characters
all the time,
more often than not.
Yep.
And we get it. You know, we were in your house every week for 7 years with those names, not as Danielle Ryder, Ben, and Will. So where is Ben Savage? Ben Savage is doing his own thing. He's doing Lifetime movies. He's busy. We would love for him to have been a part of the show. We asked him to be a part of the show. We have been talking about this podcast since 2018.
Yeah.
It was actually Will's idea.
No, it was your idea. It was
Ryder's right.
We all went to a convention because, you know, we do these conventions where we get to meet our fans. And after one of the conventions, I was like, why don't we just do a podcast where we watch it? And it was before everybody did it. Now everybody does.
It was literally, it was before Office Ladies. It was before rewatch podcasts were even a thing. Okay. Ryder. It was Ryder's idea. I was going to give the credit to Will.
I'll take the credit. My idea. No, it was totally Ryder's
idea. And we were like, wow, that is a really good idea. We should talk about it. And then we talked about it with Ben. And Ben was like, I'm not sure it's really my thing. And we said, okay, we totally understand. We'll come back to you if it ever becomes anything. And then we took a couple of meetings back in 2018, talked about it then, brought it up to Ben again and said, are you sure? This is something we really want to do. We think it could be really great. And he said, it just really is not my thing. And we have respected that. And it's not his thing. So that is why Ben is not here. And let's see, other frequently asked questions.
We always get asked what our favorite episode is. That's a
big
one.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Which, and it's always the same thing. We always say it's, we call it the Scream episode.
The Scream episode.
But it was called And Then There Was Sean, which was the Halloween episode.
I think there are a bit more answers to that question, though, because depends on what you mean. That is my favorite episode because of the memory of making it.
Yes.
Sure.
But if you ask me what the quality of the episode is, I think there are other answers. And I'm so curious because I only have memories. I don't know. You know, watching it, there's going to be a new answer, basically. Like, I think
once we watch the show, we're going to discover
that is like a solid episode, you know, in terms of just objectively speaking, not just my memories of it.
To your point, the Scream episode is my favorite episode for the memory of making it as an ensemble.
Yes, me too.
I have other favorite memories of like favorite episodes, especially from season one, that just were really salient to me as a little girl making the show.
Yes.
Like, Will, one of my favorite episodes is the episode where out of nowhere randomly Topanga has a crush on Eric.
On Eric, that was a great episode.
I have no recollection of that.
Such a good episode.
Yeah, and where I grab your face. You come in to kiss me and
I
grab your
face.
Yes, I
lean in to kiss you.
To kiss me.
And you palm my face.
I palm her face, yep.
And I can remember what your palm smelled like. For someone who has no memories at all, I remember, and I think it was because it was super awkward.
It was awkward.
You know, you were 16 and I was 12.
I was probably 17 at that time and you were 12.
It was just awkward and weird. And I remember, but I remember you being so like, obviously I hadn't even been on stage for very long. This was maybe even only my third, maybe my fourth episode ever. But you were so easy to be around. We had such a good time. And then, as we know, Topanga and Eric were practically never really had scenes where we interacted.
Occasionally.
So like that episode is one of my favorites for that reason.
Yeah.
So yes, our favorite episode is hard to pin down because because we have favorites for so many different reasons.
And it'll change. I think Ryder's right. When we watch, it'll change for exactly that reason. Like, oh, that one was special to me, or this one. And then, yeah, they will get into that whole thing because they then went weird with Eric and Topanga, where then it was like we ended up in bed together at one point. And it, do you remember this where I'm like, I need a roommate, so you'd get it, you like get ready for bed and you slide into bed and then I'm
and
already
there.
I'm in bed like, hey roomie, because that's not creepy at all.
I'm just
in bed with you.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, they did stuff like that too, where it was just like, oh, that's really weird. I'm just gonna get in bed with my brother's girlfriend. Like really bizarre stuff. So yeah, we'll unpack all, as we keep saying, we'll unpack all this as we go.
We'll unpack that for sure. Any other frequently asked questions we want to touch on here?
Feeny call?
Oh, yes.
Oh, feeny call, yes.
Will you
Danielle,
do that?
Why don't you do the feeny call anymore? is the question.
Why don't you do the feeny call?
There's a number of reasons I don't do the feeny call. There really are. And one of them is, if I'm being totally honest, I was upset with the way the Feeny call was taken from me, which is the absolute truth. So when they started Girl Meets World, Michael, I'm not trying to bash Michael in any way, shape, or form, but and he apologized to me for this, frankly, without calling me, without letting me know, without doing anything, he just popped in a tape of the Feeny call to Rowan and Sabrina and said, "You guys are now doing this. You're both doing this when you meet Mr. Feeny." Other than it saying Feeny with an exclamation point in the script, the Feeny call was mine. Like, I created that out of whole cloth. I just made that my own. So I thought, without even being asked to then take it and give it away, I didn't think was very cool. So Michael apologized to me. He's like, "You're right. That was," and I told him that. I was like, "That's, you know, that wasn't cool." He's like, "I didn't even," he said, "Look, I honestly didn't even think about it that way. You're right. I should have. Let's do some kind of passing of the torch." And I went in front of the audience at Girl Meets World. I did it one more time and I said, I pass it on to the girls. And I got that because, and this is a true story, I was doing a cartoon called Thundercats, which was one of my favorite cartoons ever growing up. And I got a chance to play Lion-O, and the original Lion-O actor, Larry Kenny, played my dad on the show, and he was at a convention, and he actually sent me the clip, and I thought this was really cool, where somebody said, "Can you do the famous Thundercats ho?" And he said, "I will do it one more time for you, but then it's Will's, and I am officially passing the torch." And I thought that was cool. He says he's never done it since. Who knows if he has, but he says he's never done it since. So I took that, coupled with kind of like, you know, that was mine and you gave it away, and I liked this passing the torch thing, and I haven't done it since.
It's also interesting. I mean, I know you've talked about, to me, you've expressed this before. You didn't even realize you had a catchphrase.
I had no idea.
It was one of those funny bits. We did a lot of bits on the show. Like, and you remember in the first season, Ben kept saying like, "I'm Superboy," or something boy. He did that and they would try these things out and give us like catchphrases or repetitive jokes. And like the Feeny call was just one of the many, like your character had so many. So it's really only in retrospect that it became like a defining characteristic of the show.
Well, yeah, it also wasn't even named the Feeny call until the last episode. The very last episode, Eric says to Feeny, you know, "Oh, be honest, you love the Feeny call. You're going to miss the Feeny call." That's the first time that was ever said. So it wasn't even would say Mr. Feeny, and I would then make it 9 minutes long. I mean, that was all that it was. It wasn't like the Feeny call.
Yeah.
So I had no idea that I had my own. Did I do that? I didn't know that. I didn't know that. Yeah. So
that's
very
so interesting.
Very that's the story behind the Feeny call. Are there any other? What are the frequently asked questions? Because we always get the same frequently asked kind of questions.
I know, and I'll be honest, I had a document with them written down and don't know where the document is. So
that's a frequently asked question for Danielle is, where did you put that thing?
Where'd your doc go?
I got him.
Okay.
Are you still friends? I think that much is obvious.
Yeah.
We don't even need to answer that. You actually cut your hair?
Danielle.
Oh, good one.
I sure did. With real scissors and everything.
We will talk about that
when that episode comes around. That's another week that I do have very strong memories, mostly of people yelling off stage on the night it was going to happen. It was such the amount of stress. Again, the importance placed on hair in this show is weird. But there was so much stress around the cutting of the hair, because you only get really one good take at it. You get one good this before, and once that's cut, you can't go back to Danielle has super long hair, certainly not quick. And it was Mike. I remember the negotiation with Michael. Show me where you're going to. No, because he did not want me to cut my hair short.
Well, and wait, you also have to say, this was the first time you had ever cut your hair in life, right?
In life. I had a trim when I was 3 years old, because from the time I was two, my hair reached my butt.
Wow.
And when I turned three, I had these little ringlets at the bottom of my hair, and my mom decided I needed a trim, and she basically just cut the ringlets off. And that was the last time I ever cut my hair.
Amazing.
So I was either 15 or 16 years old, other than little trims. You know, I would get little, like I'm talking half an inch off the bottom of my hair. Otherwise, I had that super long hair my entire life.
Crazy.
And yes, I got to be 15, 16 years old. I think I was 15. And I just wanted to cut my hair. And I asked Michael over a summer break. So our schedule, we usually started our seasons in August. And then we would shoot for 3 weeks, take a week off, shoot for 3 weeks, take a week off. And then during holidays, we'd get 2 weeks off. And we would shoot then straight until May. Mm-hmm. And then May would start our summer break. And we would go on summer break from middle of May until August. And somewhere in that summer, I called Michael and said, you know, I want to cut my hair. I guess I just knew that I couldn't just cut it, that like it was like in my contract. I don't know.
Yeah.
I knew better than to just do it. And I said, I want to cut my hair. Are you okay with that? And he said, no, absolutely not. No. Oh, no, 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 no. And then it was like, please, I've never cut it. I'm really tight. It's hot. And I've never done it. And I want something new. And he said, okay, but then you have to let me at least write an episode about it. And I said, okay. So I had to wait until the episode came around. So yes, I really did cut my hair, and I can't wait to talk about it when that episode gets around. That's going to be really fun.
You just said something really interesting, because it just had me flashback on something too. You instantly snapped to this place of, I can't do anything with my body or looks without
permission.
Asking permission, even when it was never really specifically said to, but I remember asking if I could get a tattoo, asking if I could cut my hair, asking if it's like, we just knew we're not allowed to do any of this with it. Ryder, wasn't there something where you weren't allowed to rollerblade after a while?
No, I went bungee jumping and skydiving. I remember the director that week just being like, don't tell the producers. Don't tell them you're doing this stuff.
I did that with helicopter lessons where they went, we can't let you fly. And that was it.
I don't think they ever told me to not rollerblade, but that makes such a great 90s story that maybe we should just stick with it.
The story I heard, frequently asked question, the story I heard was that you were rollerblading at the Oakwood where we all lived, and somebody broke their leg. It wasn't you, but somebody broke their leg. Your mom.
My mom broke her leg. But that was before Boy Meets World. That was before Boy Meets
World. Because I was going to say, I thought then the story I heard was they heard about that and they were like, no more rollerblading.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. No. You're done.
Wait, did you both live at Oakwood when the show started?
First season of the show, we both lived at Oakwood. I was in the Z building, I believe.
And I was Y317, baby.
No, okay, then that was the year I was in Q. Okay, because we were pretty far away, if I remember. The buildings that, okay, so just for everybody to know, the Oakwood apartments are these legendary month-to-month furnished apartments that all actors, especially child actors, would live in because you
and
could move
families.
In. And their families. You could move in for 1 month at a time, and it would have all the furniture. And so everybody would come for pilot season to make a movie or to do one show. And so, so we would live there with our, you know, you lived with your roommate, Spencer. I lived with my brother, who was on a TV show at the same time that we were doing Boy Meets World. He was on The Mommies. We both had TV shows going at the same time. Starting at the same time. And so my mom would be shuttling us from both sets, but we all lived at the Oakwoods, which is this hilly apartment complex in Burbank, and it's all paved. So it was rollerblading heaven. And it was also like summer camp for me. Like, we would go for pilot season, and you'd meet all these child actors who would be coming from all over the country, and you'd all just hang out at the pool or the hot tub, rollerblade together. Yep. Oh, we'll have so many Oakwood stories.
Child actors and divorced men. That's the only people that lived at the Oakwood.
For the record, I did not live at the Oakwood because I'm a native.
You're native.
I'm Southern Californian. Yeah. So I lived with my family. We lived in Calabasas. I just, because you kept saying we all lived there. And I was like, they're going to think we went to work.
No, you did. Yes, no.
The same complex.
Okay,
together.
I have one more frequently asked question, which I think would be a good one to go out on. And we have to keep it kind of brief because we go. But what are you guys doing now?
A podcast. That's a weird question.
Done. All right. This is the where are they now question.
This is a chance to give our
little bio of what we've been up to.
Okay. Since 2017, I have been a full-time sitcom TV director, which is just a continuation of what we're talking about here. It's something that I didn't know I ever wanted to do. I got the opportunity to do it for the first time on Girl Meets World, fell in love with it, and have been very fortunate to be able to make a career of it. So I've been doing that full-time. I also, my husband Jensen and I have a production company. We have a couple of shows in early stages of production. We have a pilot out and a few other things. And then I also have a hair care company, which I am extremely proud of. And it is a very small team. There are four of us total in the entire company, from development to it being delivered on your doorstep. We're involved in every single aspect of it. It's called Be Free by Daniel Fishel. And I love it and I'm super proud of it. And then I also have two children, which, although that is a personal life thing, it's also a job.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Ryder, what about you?
Yeah, you go, Ryder.
Yeah, I am also a father. Right now, I am full-time solo parenting while my wife, who is an actress, producer, director, writer, is off producing a feature film in New York at the moment. So this, I am on... I'm about 8 weeks into solo parenting while she's gone. So my main job right now is raising our 7-year-old and making sure, you know, he gets to school and his shoelaces are tied, which is lovely and awesome. I also run I do my own podcast, which is called Literary Disco. I am a huge book nerd, which you guys will remember from way back. I always have been. So Literary Disco I've been doing that for like 10 years, podcasting about books, and we're relaunching a new season of that. My main job is writer-director. I directed a lot of the Girl Meets World episodes and really loved it. I've made a bunch of short films, but mostly I've made a living for the last 12 years as a screenwriter. And of course, the life of a screenwriter is you write movies and then they never actually get made. but I've been paid and I've been doing, I've enjoyed it, but I'm ready to write and direct an actual movie on my own, a feature. I love it. I stopped acting probably 10 years ago, and it was the best decision I ever made. As much as I love actors and I love the industry, I really like being within it, but on the other side of the camera. So directing is my dream job. It's a very hard job to get. So writing is what I do all the time.
Are you writing anything with anyone you know right now, Ryder?
Yes. Actually, one of my many projects is with the incredibly talented Will Friedle. We're writing a feature script right now. And it's probably the best thing I'm working on right now. I'm really excited about it.
We're very excited. I left the industry at the on-camera side of the industry as well due to an anxiety disorder, which I've talked about a lot of times. I will be getting back on camera eventually. I'm slowly but surely getting there. But my love and passion since I was 19, 20 years old has been voiceover industry. I've written for a number of the animated series that I do, and it is still the joy of my life to be a voiceover actor. I have a movie that just came out last week called DC Superhero Girls and Teen Titans Mayhem in the Multiverse. I have two new series coming out, which I'm not allowed to talk about right as of yet, but they're very, very cool. And I also do a podcast about the entertainment industry, about the voiceover industry, called I Hear Voices with Christy Carlson Romano, who I did a show called Kim Possible with. And we do a show where not only do we interview all of the best voiceover actors in the world, but amateur voiceover actors get to come on and actually do a voiceover session with those voiceover actors, and then we're going to take all that stuff and animate it so people get to be in their own cartoon. It is very fun. It's called I Hear Voices. Check it out. But that has been my life. And then I do a bunch of conventions, hopefully a lot of them with these people here who I love like family. We do do some together, which is pretty amazing, and I get to travel the world with my wife and just meet fans, and it's absolutely wonderful. So that's what I've been doing.
I have one final question for all of us.
Yeah.
What's the best thing you can hope for coming out of this podcast and rewatching Boy Meets World? And what is the thing you're the most nervous or scared of? Like high point, low point. What's the best and worst of what we're about to indulge ourselves in?
Wow. Good question. Do you have anything off the top of your head, Ryder?
I don't know. I mean, I was at a wedding like, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. It was a friend's wedding, and I met an actress, comedian who was there, you know, and it was one of those 3-day weddings. So this was like day three when we were actually at the wedding and sitting down, and she was like, "Hey, you know, I grew up on your show. And you know, you're really cool. Like, you seem like really healthy and like really cool. How do you relate to that show now? Like, how do you feel about it?" And it was like the most, for the first time, I was like, I have such a long answer. And, you know, I say for the first time because I think that for at every other stage in my life, I had really pat, easy answers. You know, it was, "I'm so lucky to be on a TV show." Or then it was like, "Oh no, I'm just a student now. I don't talk about that." Or, and, you know, it just felt like such a mature question. Like, here I am, early 40s with another actor in their 40s asking me a very honest question, like, what was that? And I realized I could talk for probably an hour and a half if I let myself. And so I think that that's what this show is for me personally, like, is trying to come to terms with with what Boy Meets World means, because it had such a cultural impact outside of my control. When you're a kid actor, like we were saying about our hair and whatnot, so many things are outside of your control. And as positive as that can be, because like, hey, I made enough money to be able to send myself through college, you know, like my parents didn't have to pay for that. I've been able to have this great life as access point to the writing career that I now have. So there's so many positive things that came from Boy Meets World. There's also a lot of negative memories I have of how it affected my life. And for a long time, I wanted to be anything but Sean Hunter from Boy Meets World. I spent most of my 20s running away from it. And now I'm at a place where I think I can kind of be mature enough to see it from both sides and to talk that out. So I don't have an easy answer, but I think that that's why we should do this podcast, is because I think it's a really complicated question and it has a really complicated answer.
I think that's kind of where I would go. I mean, the high point for me is doing it with both of you.
Yeah.
The being able to do something that, again, I watched the first episode and I genuinely had a huge spike of anxiety pressing play before I hit the first episode of the show. Wow. And one of the things that helps me and always has helped me is being around people that I love and I trust, and knowing that I'm with the both of you and going on this journey where we can talk about all this stuff together. And you're talking about it with people that went through the same thing. You know, you're in the trenches together. And while our experiences might have differed, we can come at it from the same place, which is something that I'm very much looking forward to. What scares me is pulling back the curtain to realize that the great and powerful Oz is just a man. That's what scares me, is that these memories that I have that are so wonderful for me, and so incredible, that really when I do look at them as an adult, I might look back and maybe they're not as great as I remember them being, which, again, I don't know, frankly. And there's it's going to bring up a lot of different emotions all the way through. And there are emotions that I want to, we keep using the word unpack, that I want to unpack. I'm glad I'm doing it with the both of you. But that's what scares me the most, is I have maybe put the show and my experiences on the show on a little bit of a pedestal, and I'm making sure that the pedestal is marble and not feather. And when I look back, I'm hoping it's as I remember. And that's, I think, what scares me the most is, you know, again, having some of the guest cast come back on and having other people we worked with come back on, and maybe their experiences weren't that great. And it's those kind of things that's going to make me relook at my own past from a different perspective. And I think I need to, frankly. I mean, nobody's life is perfect. I don't care how amazing you think your experience was. It was still just an experience that had highs and lows. And it's going to be interesting to go back. So that's, again, a long-winded answer that got us nowhere. But that's kind of how I feel.
That's exactly why I asked. I am very much looking forward to going through this with you guys. It is, for lack of a better term, it's a safe space. It feels safe to go through this with you guys. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm hoping, like I said, that it will bring back some memories for me, because I do have very fond memories of most of the time on Boy Meets World, and I'd like to have more of them. Every time you guys remind me of stuff or say things that I'm like, no, I don't remember that, I start to like, I think, like when Ryder mentioned some of the small audience on Wednesdays, I was like, I do kind of remember that toward the end. Like, oh, that's interesting. So I'm excited to see what it brings up. Like I said, I'm excited for the nostalgia dive. I will be perfectly honest and say that the thing that makes me the most nervous is I know how beloved this show is to so many people. And we meet them, we meet fans at cons, and they tell us these very personal stories about what the show meant. And that always means so much to us. We walk away from those conventions and we say, I am so glad I met everybody that I met this weekend and I heard their stories. And I want to watch the show and be very honest in the podcast about the feelings it brings up for me, the thoughts I have about a scene or a storyline or the acting, whether it's my own or, you know, whatever. I want to be able to be very honest about it. And my what makes me the most nervous is possibly ruining something that some maybe even just one memory for somebody that they love. And so that makes me nervous, but I'm going to just have to be very honest about how I feel. And hopefully it's mostly, you know, rosy and fun and wonderful the way it is in my memory. But I just want us to be as honest as possible as we go through this, because I think that's going to be what's best for everyone.
Yeah,
I think so too. That's good. That was a great answer. I want to take that one.
So next week, we're jumping in. We are rewatching the pilot.
Both feet.
Starting in with episode number 101, the pilot, it was called. And so, yeah, next week, big week. I can't wait to jump in. And right. Listen, writer, I think our first week, since this podcast was your idea, you have the honors of our tagline.
We love you all. Pod dismissed.
Pod Meets World is an iHeart podcast produced and hosted by Danielle Fishel, Will Friedle, and Ryder Strong. Executive producers Jensen Karp and Amy Sugarman. Executive in charge of production Danielle Romo. Producer and editor Tara Sudbach. Producer Lorraine Verwez. Engineer and Boy Meets World superfan Easton Allen. Our theme song is by Kyle Morton of Typhoon. Follow us on Instagram at Pod Meets World Show or email us at podmeetsworldshow@gmail.com. When I'm on my way to drop off the kids at school and I'm on about 5 hours of sleep and I haven't had my coffee yet, I'm truly one of a kind.
Yeah, this sounds like the beginning of a horror movie.
It is. But there is one thing I can do immediately to bring some comfort and calm to the situation and keep me moving forward. Eat Keebler Sandies.
I like to think that if the good-looking guy was still around, sitting on the couch, comforting himself about not getting into college, he'd ditch the Cocoa Puffs and down some Keebler Sandies instead.
Mixed with chocolate syrup?
Ooh, why not?
When you need a comforting moment for yourself, Keebler Sandies is the perfect treat to keep you going.
Each Keebler Sandies shortbread cookie is baked to perfection by the Keebler elves for a light sweetness and a texture that melts in your mouth.
The next time you feel like you're juggling it all, reach for Keebler Sandies shortbread cookies to enjoy a simple moment of comfort.
This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best-fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby. When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things. Watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
And as you know, we are tech heads.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
And with the available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need.
That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class.
And 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles.
That's the beauty of the Active Cash credit card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards.
The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready.
Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.